Zichar Nishmas Yaakov ben HaChaver Yehuda. In Shir 34, we're going to examine the mitzvah of Kilayim, and we're going to start off quoting a whole bunch of psukim. So we're going to start with Bereishis 1, 11, and 12, and I'm going to read the translation from the Living Nach. So the Torah tells us, Vayomer Elohim, Tatshe Haaretz Desha, Esev Mazriya Zera, Eitz Peri Oseb Peri Lemino, Asher Zarovo Al Haaretz, Vayhi Chayin. God said, the earth shall send forth vegetation, seed-bearing plants, and fruit trees that produce their own kinds of fruits with seeds shall be on the earth. And it happened. Vatotze haaretz desha, esev mazriya zera leminehu, ve'etz osa periya shar zar ovo leminehu, vayar Elohim ki tov. The earth sent forth vegetation, plants bearing their own kinds of seeds, and trees producing fruits containing their own kinds of seeds. God saw that it was good. We now move on to Bereishis 1, Psukim 20 through 22. Vayomer Elohim yishrutzu amayim sheretz nefesh chaya, ve'ofi ofeifa al haaretz al pnei rekiya ha'shamayim. God said, the water shall teem with swarms of living creatures. Flying creatures shall fly over the land on the face of the heavenly sky. Vayivra Elohim es ha'taninim ha'gidolim, ve'es kol nefesh ha'chaya ha'romeses asher sharutzu amayim l'mineihem, ve'es kol of kanaf l'mineihu, vayar Elohim ki tov. God thus created the great sea monsters, along with every particular species of living things that crawls, with which the waters teem, and every particular species of winged flying creature. God saw that it was good. Vayvarechu sam Elohim lemor, piru urvu, umilu es hamayim bayamim, v'ha'of yirev ba'aretz. God blessed them, saying, be fruitful and become many, and fill the waters of the seas, let the flying creatures multiply on the land. We're now going to go to Bereishis 1, 24 through 25. Vayomer Elohim, totze haaretz nefesh chaya limina, v'hema v'remes v'chayso aretz limina, vayhi chayin. God said, the earth shall bring forth particular species of living creatures, particular species of livestock, land animals, and beasts of the earth. And it happened. Vayas Elohim es chayas ha'aretz limina, ves ha'behema limina, ves kol remes ha'adama liminehu, vayar Elohim ki tov. God thus made particular species of beasts of the earth, particular species of livestock, and particular species of animals that walk the land. God saw that it was good. Now, our key word that we keep mentioning here is limina, or liminehu, which means each one according to its kind, or each one according to its type. Okay, now we go to Vayikra 19:19. Es chukosai tishmoru, behem techolos harbia kilayim, sadechalos tizra kilayim, veged kilayim sha'adnez lo ya'ale olecho. Keep my decrees, meaning my chukim. Do not crossbreed your livestock with other species. Do not plant your field with different species of seeds. Do not wear a garment that contains a forbidden mixture of fabrics. Okay, and finally, we're going to quote Devarim 22:9-11. Lo sizra karmecha kilayim, pentikdash hamileya hazera asher tizra usuas hakarim. Do not plant different species in your vineyard. If you do so, the yield of both crops you planted and the fruit of the vineyard will be forfeit. Lo sacharosh bishoru v'chamor yachdav. Do not plow with an ox and a donkey together. Lo silbash sha'anez tzemer ufishtim yachdav. Do not wear a forbidden mixture where wool and linen are together in a single garment. Let's analyze these psukim, and we also need to understand why we are including all of these verses from Bereishis. So when one reads through the creation narrative, the Torah states many times that God made every creation limino, or liminehem, as we pointed out, after its, or after their, kind. And every living thing has certain innate laws according to which that thing develops. These creations follow these innate laws, and they will never on their own mix together. Not only that, but man is commanded not to interfere with this divine order of creation. When the Torah commands us that we are not allowed to mix various species, it begins by saying that you should keep my chukim. And based on this, the Gemara in Sanhedrin states that we need to keep the laws of nature that I, meaning God, established for the world, which takes precedence to the Torah that we received at a later date, right? First, the world was created with certain rules that were set down, and then Torah came, meaning we received Torah at a later time. The Torah prohibits mixing naturally separate species, and this confirms these natural laws that the universe was built upon. We see this put into practice with the mitzvah of Kalayim that prohibits us from creating such mixtures, and through this we affirm that God is the universal lawgiver, as after all, these species follow His laws of nature. If we look toward the mystical understanding of this mitzvah, as we have learned, the Jewish mystics are concerned with how our mitzvahs affect the harmony of the universe, and, as Diane Grunfeld writes, the Jewish mystics have made the laws of Kilayim the pivot of a special cosmogony. And cosmogony is the branch of science that deals with the origin of the universe, especially the solar system. So he then quotes from the Zohar, so we're going to see the exact translation. When God created the world, He assigned all things to their respective sides and appointed over them celestial powers so that there is not even a tiny herb without such a supervisor, and whatever they do is done through the power of that heavenly control, and all are rigidly assigned, and none leaves its appointed sphere. All are guided by another superior regulation, which gives to each its portion, which comes from the heavens, and altogether are called the statutes of the heavens. Hence it is written, "You shall keep my statutes, my chukim," because each power is appointed over a certain sphere in the world in virtue of a certain statute. Therefore, it is forbidden to confound species and mate them one with another, because this dislodges the heavenly power from its place and is a defiance of the celestial household. The word kilayim, diverse kinds, also bears the meaning of preventing, indicating that one who does this prevents the celestial powers from carrying out their function and throws them into confusion. As has been said, he alters the commands of the king and exchanges the tree of life, by which all is perfected and on which faith depends, for another place. Okay, so those that follow this line of reasoning explain that every creature, including man, has a special divine agent appointed over that creature, and this agent's job is to supervise the development of the specific creature that is placed in its care, and to make sure that it follows the natural laws of the universe. Any illicit mixture of species here on Earth disturbs the tasks that were given to these divine agents and causes confusion in the heavens. So to sum it up, according to this line of reasoning, Kalayim interferes with the operation of the heavenly beings that are meant to supervise these creatures or plants and causes some sort of disturbance in the balance of the universe. Men and nations, we also have innate laws that must be followed, and this is sometimes referred to as mazal. The Torah is an actualization of the concept of limino, the law of life and development, suited to and intended for the Jewish people, to use exact words from Diane Grunfeld. Every living thing, person and nation, has a particular task, and this task is to bring perfection, limino, to its species. God, for whatever reason, requires every one of these creatures in His universe. To quote, God gave each of these creatures its innate law or mazel, and in the loyal obedience to this law, the creatures joyfully exist, leaving the guidance of the world to God, content to add their share to the continued existence of the universe. Thus, God also needs in the human realm different kinds of men, Jews and Gentiles alike. He has allotted to each his destiny and his innate law, and the great purpose of God could only be achieved if everyone joyfully and conscientiously fulfills his own destiny, obeys the law provided for him, and thus makes that contribution to the good of the whole which God expects of him. Okay, so that's a summary of the mystical approach. Rambam understands that Kalayim is meant to counteract idolatrous practices, as Rambam so often does. He uses this reason for many, many of the mitzvos. Rambam, however, follows the mystical approach that we mentioned, and he says that one who makes light of these halachos is making a mockery of the law of creation. Quoting the pasuk in Iyov that says, Hayodat chukos shamayim, im tasim mishtaro ba'aretz, do you know the rules of heaven? Can you set the dominion of the earth? Okay, now this will get us started as we look toward the halachos of Kelayim, and later we're going to add some more ideas as well as seeing what Rav Hirsch adds to this discussion. There are four types of Kelayim. So number one is called Kilei Ziroim, planting various seeds together, grafting trees and various herbs with each other or onto trees. Trees that are exclusively used for wood may be grafted on other wood trees. Illegal mixtures need to be destroyed, and this is something that Beis Din used to do. The fruit of these mixtures, however, do not need to be destroyed, and they may be eaten. As far as Kilei Zeraim, this applies to Eretz Yisrael, but grafting trees is prohibited both in and out of the land, and is prohibited for both Jews and for non-Jews. Next we have Kilei HaKerem. This refers to planting a vineyard with different types of seeds. So for example, it is usher to plant vine seeds with two types of grain or other plant seeds in one, next to each other, or even in the same vineyard. Not only is Kilei HaKerem usher to eat, but one may not even have any hanaf from the mixture. Now this is true in Eretz Yisrael. Outside of Eretz Yisrael, this is still usher rabbinically. Any produce from this sort of mixture must be burnt. The halachos of Kilei HaKerem we see are stricter than those of Kilei Zeraim. And Rav Hirsch points out how the Torah could have completely prohibited vines due to the intoxication that can result from it and a general demoralization of society. However, the Torah commands us to have wine in the Mikdash for Nesachim, and of course we use wine in various things that we do. Again, the Torah does not forbid us to enjoy life, but to the contrary, the Torah seeks to have us enjoy life in a moral manner. Now, this of course applies to all food and other earthly pleasures, but when it comes to wine, which is our case, and meat, as we previously discussed, the Torah gives us special safeguards which surround the mitzvah to keep us in this high moral state. So moving on, our third type of kelayim is called harvos behema, and this is the isser of allowing animals of different kinds to mate with each other. The word kelayim is from chaf lamed aleph, which means to hold back. Man is not allowed to interfere with the created order of the universe, and animals are also included in this category. Pairing of different kinds of animals is forbidden outside of Eretz Yisrael as well, and it is also usher for non-Jews to pair these animals, and this isser applies to behemos, chayos, and ophos. Not only are we not allowed to mate them together, but we're not even allowed to have them work together, as it says in Devarim 22:10. Even though the Torah is specific in that it mentions an ox and a donkey that they can't work together, this rule applies to all diverse animals, and there are various reasons as to why the Torah doesn't allow two different types of animals to work together. So Rambam says it's to prevent them from mating together, while Ibn Ezra and others say that it's cruel to allow them to work together since different animals work at different paces. So this brings us to the fourth and final type of kelayim, which is kilei begadim, the prohibition of wearing garments made of wool and linen, and this isser is called shatnez. The prohibition of shatnez only applies to wool and linen. We actually did not know the etymology of the word shatnez. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman, he interprets it to mean to wrap up in a falsified garment. Rav Hirsch on his Chumash commentary on Vayikra 19:19. So he quotes Mishnah 9:8 in Kalayim, and according to the Tanakhama, the word sha'atnez is an abbreviation of the process needed to transform raw material into woven fabric. So the Mishnah says, Shua, which is combing, Tavoy, which is spinning, and Nuz, which is weaving. And according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, the word is an expression related to the moral significance of climb, which we will get back to momentarily. So what is the deeper meaning behind the prohibition of Shatnez? So Rashi and Rabbeinu Bachya, they tell us that the whole mitzvah is beyond our understanding. We don't know any reasons for it. Rav Shimon ben Elazar, who we quoted above, says that one who wears Shatnez is estranged, from the word naluz, and estranges, meliz, God against him. Josephus writes that the reason for the prohibition is that since the Kohanim wear wool and linen together, it's unseemly that non-Kohanim should dress with wool and linen. However, Dan Grunfeld points out that we can't take this very seriously because every individual is obligated to wear tzitzis if you are wearing a four-cornered garment, and tzitzis may be made of shatnez. So I believe what this means, if I recall correctly, is that the garment could be linen and the tzitzis themselves can be made out of wool, and that is okay. Rambam states that shatnez is usher due to the fact that heathen priests would dress in mixtures of wool and linen, and Diane Grunfeld writes that this reason has found little acceptance among the Jewish people, and Rav Aaron Halevi, who may have been the author of Sefer Achinuch, that's debatable, he writes on this Rambam that kol zeh einenu shoveli, meaning he doesn't feel that this answer is very strong or compelling. In terms of the mystical approach, the same reason is given for shatnez and klaim, and that is to avoid mixing species and interfering with the order of creation, as wool is from the animal world and linen is from the plant world. Rav Hirsch posits this approach as well, and he adds that the Torah wants to make sure that we observe this limino aspect of keeping nature as God intended it to be in our clothing, and because we're wearing it, this always reminds us from the fact that we can't wear these mixtures, meaning we consciously avoid this, and that we may not do anything that interferes with the order of creation. So this is kind of like a constant reminder that we have. Rav Hirsch writes that the origin of clothing goes back to man's first sin when he permitted himself to follow his physical desires, which the Pasuk testifies to when it says, Vatira ha'isha ki tov ha'etz lema'achal, v'chi sa'avahu lo'inayim, v'nechmad ha'etz lehaskil, v'tikach mi piryo v'tochal, v'titein gam li'isha imah v'yochal. And we know that the Torah tells us that you're not allowed to follow your heart and your eyes. But what happened was, man chose to go against God's moral law, avoiding the fruit of the tree. So before man sinned, we know that man was naked. Clothing was unnecessary because man's sense of shame came from his conscience, and his conscience is the voice that you hear inside of yourself. That's God's voice talking to man. But however, after man sinned, the Torah attests to the fact that they suddenly knew they were naked and they made clothing for themselves. And originally they were not ashamed. So what changed? The purpose of their clothing, aside of course from the obvious benefits of clothing, was part of the process of tshuva. It was to return to the moral will of Hashem. Clothing to a Jew has two purposes. First, clothing reminds us of man's sin. And second, so from here I'm going to quote until the end of the chapter. As far as the law of shatnez is concerned, which forbids him to mix wool and linen in his garment, it also reminds the faithful Israelite of the great lawgiver and his law of species that keeps apart the countless number of creatures with all their manifold diversity, assigned to each of them a separate task. In connection with the law of meat and milk, basar b'chalav, which Rav Hirsch, like the Jewish mystics, counts among the laws safeguarding the separation of species, it has already been pointed out that just as in the organism of animals, so in that of man, there are two elements present, the vegetative one of nutrition and reproduction, and the animal one of movement and the perception of the senses. However, man differs from the animal in the relationship of these two elements to each other. In animals, movement and perception are used entirely in the service of vegetative purposes, that is, in the urges for food and reproduction. In man, however, The vegetative element is to be subordinated to the animal element in him, the latter to the human element, and both to the moral will of God, expressed symbolically, taking wool, tsemer, to represent the animal, and flax, pishtim, the vegetative element in the living beings, both are combined in animals. In man, however, they are to be separated, and each contained in its own sphere. Associated with the origin of clothes and their meaning in connection with morals, the law of Shatnez, like the law of Tzitzis, exhorts man not to move downwards to vegetative sensuality, but upwards to the understanding and realization of his free will mind in order to ennoble himself in accomplishing the purposes which are moral and therefore holy to God. Thus, Rav Hirsch enlarges the mystic meaning of the laws of Kalayim in general, and the law of Shatnez in particular, into a moral one, and combines mysticism with moral philosophy. So this ends Shir 34, and next time we will be Ezer Hashem discuss the mitzvah of Challah.